human growth hormone has been synthesized outside the human body for nearly 20 years. It's an expensive drug, on average $20,000 a year. It was first used only in children whose growth was stunted because their bodies didn't make enough of the hormone. In the third part of our series examining healthy short children who take growth hormone, NPR's Snigdha Prakash reports on why and how drug companies and doctors keep this business niche growing.
It's an elusive elixir in its natural form, secreted by the pituitary gland in the dead of night, in tiny, almost unmeasurable amounts that are used up as soon as they're released. It wasn't until the 1960s that scientists learned even how to measure the amount of growth hormone a child was producing. Physician Glenn Brownstein of the UCLA School of Medicine says doctors treated children who weren't making enough with hormone made by someone else.
The pituitary glands would be removed from individuals who died and underwent an autopsy. Growth hormone was extracted from the pituitary gland and purified, and this was the mainstay of therapy for many, many years.
But in 1985, pituitary-derived hormone was linked to the death of three children from a condition similar to mad cow disease, and the FDA banned the hormone. Later that year, the FDA approved a new form of growth hormone, this one synthesized in vats of bacteria. It was one of the first biotech drugs. Margaret McGilvery, Professor Emeritus of Pediatrics at the University of Buffalo Medical School and a consultant to manufacturer Eli Lilly, says the approval of recombinant growth hormone was a watershed event.
We went from a period of chronic shortages to an era of unlimited supplies of growth hormone. There was no limit to how much growth hormone could be made using the new technology.
As the supply of growth hormone grew, so did its uses, expanding from children who were growth hormone deficient to children with other genetic disorders that compromise growth, and then to children, mostly boys, who are healthy but short. That use was approved by the Food and Drug Administration last month. Less than 20 years after growth hormone became freely available, shortness had gone from being an immutable fact of life to a medical condition demanding expensive treatment. Physician and bioethicist Carl Elliott of the University of Minnesota says it's a common and predictable pattern in modern American medicine.
Once we develop a technology to treat a condition, we have a tendency to reconceptualize it as a medical problem.
Short children are now deemed to have the medical problem called idiopathic short stature. That means short stature whose cause is unknown.
It gets institutionalized in a way. It's talked about in medical journals. It's given that name. It's given a billing code and so on.
Advocates of treating idiopathic short stature say short children deserve the treatment because without it, the children suffer the stigma of being short in a society that favors the tall. Bioethicist Art Kaplan of the University of Pennsylvania sees it a bit differently. He says short, healthy children have been redefined as sick because it enlarges the market for growth hormone.
We've seen a movement across the board to play on people's anxieties that they're less than average to move products. If you're feeling a little bit down, maybe not dysfunctionally so, but if you'd like to feel a little bit better, maybe you'd like to take some sort of a pill. If you are in a situation where perhaps you're having some sexual dysfunction, not a disease, but just occasionally not performing the way you want, maybe you'd like to take Viagra.
If drug maker Eli Lilly's estimates are right, treating healthy, short children with growth hormone could be a $1 billion market. Cracking that market will take the help of endocrinologists, specialists who diagnose and treat growth disorders, and drug makers are likely to get that help.
For the past 15 years, the growth hormone industry really has been the engine that has really driven pediatric endocrinology forward.
David Allen is the director of pediatric endocrinology at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He says the money from drug makers has funded valuable research, and it's converted endocrinologists into the industry's willing partners.
Have we bought into the concept that taller is better? Well, I think we have. I think it's hard to look at pediatric endocrinology over the last 15 years and not come away with the conclusion that there's been a tremendous amount of effort put into making kids taller.
Now that the FDA has given the go-ahead to giving growth hormone to short, healthy kids, Alan says endocrinologists are smack dab in the middle of an ethical dilemma. Why not give the drug to any child who wants to be taller? It would be the next logical step in the ever-growing market for growth hormone, and exactly what critics are afraid of. Snigdha Prakash, NPR News, Washington.